like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was before we moved, Spencer. We moved here from Burlington. The shops was at Burlington.
Right.
And after Samuel Spencer was elected head of the Southern Railroad, he wanted to put the shops center of the line between Washington and Atlanta. And they were going to put it over yet in Moxville, North Carolina. But the Hendersons owned all this real estate. They owned, still own some of it. But all this belongs to all the Henderson Woods, all through here. All most of the river down there. The fellow Sowers owned it. And the rest of the way. And they had a lot of political influence, and they went to Raleigh and persuaded them to put it in Salisbury. Of course, they didn't want to put it out of town, you know, and they put it up there. They bought a farm from a colored man named Partee.
Mm-hmm.
Through a real estate deal, they got somebody else to buy it from him, and then they sold it to the Southern Railroad. Building the shops. They first started out with just four buildings. They were sheet steel. The buildings had steel frames sheet steel, but less than a quarter of an inch thick. That was a carpenter shop and a blacksmith shop and the erection shop. That was why they're called the back shop. Well, they overhauled the engines and the roundhouse.
Mm-hmm. You said that they bought the land here from a black man?
Or? Yes, he was a colored man named Partee.
Hmm. Were there a lot of colored people around here, or was it?
No, he just owned that farm now where the shops is now. He owned all that parcel of land. Of course, they had to buy it on the railroad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't buy it away from railroad. But they had facilities that then, but they didn't have many cars in the train in those days. Didn't have much space, yard space. The yard was very small. And later on, the trains began to grow larger, and the locomotives become larger, and that's the reason they haven't put that large building that they have out today where the museum is.
Mm-hmm.
I think all those other buildings have been torn down.
Yeah, most of them
have
been torn down.
Now. I think the power plant's still there.
Yeah.
Those other buildings have been torn down.
Do you remember any railroad accidents?
Oh yeah, we had used to have a lot of railroad accidents. Cars were made of wood. And you have a collision. You didn't have much of a chance if you were passing on the train.
Hmm.
I remember one in particular, what they called a football special. It left Charlotte going to Richmond. Carolina-Virginia game was being played in Richmond.
Mm-hmm. About what year is this, do you think?
That was 1916. night before Thanksgiving, they had a lot of wooden Pullman cars on there. Practically all people there, they play from sleep during the nights, you know, couldn't get to Richmond the next morning. And Governor Max Gardner, he was a football player. He got injured on that wreck. Number 38 run into the rear of it. It was a long train. I reckon it had about 15, 20 cars on the train. The rear was stuck out way down low east in this bridge there.
Mm-hmm.
And 38, the flagman didn't get back or something. And he come around at pretty good speed there, about the ice plant, where the ice plant was. And just beyond that, while the rear of the train was standing, and run the rear, killed several people. And all wooden, well, the red car was practically demolished. Several people there were killed. Max Gardner got enough money, got enough settlement out of the Southern Railroad Company to complete his law course at the University of North Carolina. And they had given him a start there, you see. I think he's having trouble getting money.
So he owes his career to the Southern Railroad in a way.
Yeah, he was governor of North Carolina. It cost Southern Railroad a lot of money, and then about the biggest wreck was William Cody, Buffalo Bill wreck, they called it, over here at Linwood, North Carolina. Freight train was inside at Lexington. He thought all of them, there were two sections of this circus train. About 20 cars each, about 40 car train, but they had to split it into two trains. And the first section went by, and he was inside track at Lexington, so he pulled out. And he met the second section right there, by where the old station was at Linwood, and killed all of Buffalo Bill's best horses, killed several people on the train. And all the cars were made of wood, and they were practically demolished. This, let me think of her name. Annie Oakley, you ever heard of her? She was a crack shot, you know.
Right.
And she was in one of the old Pullman cars, had been converted into a show car for sleeping purposes. And her hair turned from, I don't know whether she was blonde or brunette, but overnight, next morning, her hair was turned white from the experience she had in that wreck. Buffalo Bill, they say he's walking around there with a 45 in his hand looking for the engineer, but he jumped off and wasn't hurt. He walked all the way from Linwood to Spencer. But he had a 45 Colt in his hand, he's looking for him, he's going to kill him because killed all of his best horses. That come right near, almost, well, it told him Southern Railroad was going to bankruptcy. They had so much lawsuits, and they quit hauling circus trains there for around 30 years before they ever hauled any more circus trains.
That's interesting.
Too much involved there. Their financial situation was pretty serious right after that wreck occurred. Young man there going bankrupt.
Did people talk much about?
Oh yes, that's all they talk about. And the people over around Linwood, they woke up next morning, there's elephants walking around in the yards, you know, the farm, the old farms, and giraffes. Some of them never had seen a giraffe before. They were walking around there looking for something to eat after daylight come, and this happened at night, you know, about midnight. And that whole country was covered with elephants, giraffes.
That must have been wild.
Yeah.
Did people ever, were people nervous about going onto trains? You know, like some people are nervous about flying today?
A lot of people are kind of scared to get on trains. You're taking your life in your own hand to get on that train. Of course, later on, they got steel cars. Proper signals, but still yet they have wrecks, you know. I heard about one up on some railroad out west last week. They had a head-on collision. Everybody wondered why it happened. They say it's foolproof. Couldn't happen, but it happened. Another Southern had some head-on collisions.
Yeah.
But the traffic signals and everything you got now, it's much safer. And they don't have as many as they had in the olden days. They had steam locomotives, and a lot of smoke. I remember when they had wood burners. When we first moved here, So the railroad got control of the KP and Yadkin Valley Railroad from Mount Airy to Sanford, North Carolina, and the coastline got from Sanford to Wilmington. So that the old Cape Fear and Yadkin Valley Railroad.
Mm-hmm.
And all the engines were in wood, and they sent them all to Spencer Shop to be converted into coal burners instead of wood burners. And they had those big diamond statues. You saw pictures of them on the old locomotive. All the big diamond sacks on there, and those old sacks laid out there for a long time. Finally, the scrapping because they didn't have any use for them.
What was the town like with all those steam locomotives? It must have made things dirty.
A lot of smoke there. A lot of people coming in here, coming down here. You see all that smoke on that big fire ahead in there somewhere. You know, they had the roundhouse there, and they had the engine steamed up and ready to go, and a lot of smoke coming up. And they had the power plant that's furnished the power. First time I ever saw electric light was they had gas lights in Salisbury when we moved here, and then converted into electricity. But Southern had to give the town there a light on the corner there where the building's been torn down. They gave them one light there, you know, and that came from the power plant to shop. That stood there for a long time before they had street lamps.
Mm.
And they got the power from that. They generated the power then.
But did you live in Spencer?
Yeah, we moved here from Burlington, and the shops opened up on October 1st, 1896, and we moved here the early part of February in 1897. We moved to East Spencer. That's where all the houses were and where all the stores were. So Spencer began to... It's called Southern City then. It wasn't called for East Spencer. It's called Southern City.
Did the railroad ever cause any fire?
Railroad, yeah, they had fires there. They had fire there in the storehouse one time. They had one there in the roundhouse one time.
Was it because of the...
They rebuilt the roundhouse. They built that out of concrete.
And did the smoke coming out of the locomotive, did that cause any fires ever? Were there sparks
and
stuff?
Well, it would, you see. That smoke, it got settled somewhere, and you'd get a little fire started, you know. That's smoke, you know, converts into combustible material.
Mm-hmm.
Consequently, and then the heat got to it, you know, it just went up, and just like this gasoline got so hot. All those steel girders and the accumulation there, say, of about 2 or 3 inches deep. Smoke cinders, combustible coal, most of it come out of the smokestack. You'd be walking along the railroad, you know, and the fireman throwing in coal at you. You can feel those sprinkles, coal sprinkling on top of your head. Back in those days, it's coming out through the smokestack. It hadn't been consumed with the fire in the firebox, you see. And you're working the engine pretty hard, well, naturally it comes out the smokestack.
Mm-hmm.
I remember an occasion I saw down the North Carolina Railroad one time, and they'll come by, all the smoke was just boiling up. He ran an engine on New York Central Railroad. And, oh, you wouldn't see that on New York Central, says they won't allow you to use smoke there to conserve that smoke. You got the fire source to keep a fire burning normally, you know, and when you throw coal in there, it'll be consumed before it goes into smoke. So that's why the best part, you're losing your fuel that way.
Mm-hmm. So if you have lots of smoke come out, it means you're not doing a good fire? Or?
Yeah, it's improper firing. They claim that you're a man's a good fireman. He can fire that engine without making too much black smoke. If folks didn't know how to do it. A little art to it, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know, when you get the shovel, that coal in the firebox, it's the firebox that heats it up, you see, and you're losing out of the smokestack. The very best part of your coal is going out your smokestack.
Did people who worked on the railroad, did they have any, did they bring their own tools to the job at all? Did they have special things that they brought, or good luck charms, or anything like that?
Well, I may have.
You don't know of any in particular?
Some of them had a little superstition. A lot of them, everybody I read me.
Mm-hmm.
But stepping on the ladder, you know.
There aren't any superstitions that you know of that have to do specifically with the railroad.
Yeah, they had something there. I was trying to think of some of them. But white cat run across your track, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard fellows say, yeah, coming up there, going to work. That's where we had electric lights in town, and saw a black cat run on. So I had to go around four blocks after reading them late and reporting for duty. I'd make a detour to keep them past that black cat run across his path. He wasn't taking any chances.
I don't blame him. No sense taking a chance. You can do it another way.
One fellow said that. He went back to sleep after the call, and he came to the snake on his path from his house to the road, and he couldn't get by him. Every time he'd move, the snake would move. That's the tale he told, you know, because he went back to sleep, and he tried to make that excuse that he couldn't get by that snake,
mm-hmm.
The big snake in his path. You'd make a move, get around him. That's really his late reporting for you and delayed the train.
You think he was telling the truth? Or just
yeah. Like an engineer come to the office and says, I got a letter I want you to type for me. You got a letter from the superintendent. Why I didn't blow the whistle? I says, all right, I typed it out for him. I said, what do you want to tell him now? He said, well, the folks in this milepost that didn't blow road crossing. He reached up to blow the whistle, and the whistle cord broke. Of course, that could happen, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
But he was pretty smart, you know. About that time, the whistle cord broke, and that's really didn't sound the whistle for the road crossing. The superintendent was riding the train, you know. He checked on him. The explanation he got said it could have happened, I understand. I said, how do you think of that so quick? He said, you got to think quick.
Accidents like that happened pretty often then?
Oh, yes. It didn't have water inspection laws like they have now. I worked in the Water Inspection Bureau for about 13 years. I handled monthly reports, and quarterlies, and the yearly reports on all the steam locomotives. I had over 500 that kept you hopping there to keep up all those 500 locomotives. You got to be inspected every 30 days, and federal inspector come around and see the engine that run out of date. Well, he fines the railroad company. So put a fine on, put a heavy fine on for violating the law. You see, they run the engine, hadn't been inspected in 30 days, and done fast. It'd allow you 5 days grace,
mm-hmm.
but the fine wasn't running like that over date. And I'd be responsible there. I had to find out why that engine was. And it's come due and wasn't inspected the next day. I was searching to find why it didn't run, stop it from running, get it into the terminal there to be inspected. And you almost got one lost up there that told me they had it come to the shop, but it didn't get there. It's ice full. And I asked him, I said, why is your report on this engine? He said it was, last week he said it was there. Oh, we forgot that. Still down there, I said, we'll get in here today for federal inspector's recording. Run over, about 10 days past due then.
Mm-hmm.
They'd find the railroad company a considerable amount of money.
People used to put it off.
Fortunately, as far as I know, I'd have a man, he signed his report and I got to be sworn in. They wouldn't fire him for failing to do his duty, they'd fire him for perjury. That's what they would prosecute him for perjury. Because he swore he, the best of his knowledge and belief, he had performed the work in accordance with the law. And as far as I know, nobody ever was injured as a result of not following the principles of the law, the boiler inspection law. We had to use those, clean those gauge cocks out, and it gets sucked up, you see, and the water gauge on that had to be cleaned out so that wouldn't get sucked up, so the engineer could see it. But as far as I know, nobody ever was, well, as long as I was on the job, nobody ever was scalded or had a personal injury.
That's good.
As a result of a violation of law, they were a pretty good group of men, and they were honest men, and they wouldn't swear to something unless they didn't do it. I think they were anxious to perform the duties because they didn't want to get in trouble, because it'd be, you go to court and you got perjury on your hand, you won't have time to get the lawyer to defend you on that, because all the lawyers, they defend that, because that's their living, you see. And you go to perjuring yourself, they don't want to have nothing to do with you.
That's right. You're talking about making at these reports, you know, on a monthly basis and quarterly and all that. I was just wondering about, there's the impression that time is real important to railroad men. They've always got their watches and
that kind
of thing.
Yeah, that's a very important factor in railroading. Because they have watch inspection laws, you know. You got inspector watches every quarter, see if they still function, haven't got too much dirt or something in it, and need to be cleaned out. You got to take them to authorized watch inspector for the Southern Railroad. But they don't pay much attention to that now, and most everybody has a wristwatch. But formerly you had to be a pocket watch, and to set that watch you had to open the case in the front and pull a little lever up, then turn you, if it's lost some time, something like that, and then close it back up. But now they got these wristwatches, I don't hear much about the watch inspection that I did. You know, I guess they still have it.
I don't know. Did you all have to set your watches every day to a master clock somewhere? Or?
Yeah, I had, when I worked in the roundhouse, we had a Western Union clock that regulated itself twice in 24 hours, 12 o'clock in the daytime, 12 o'clock at night. If it was lost in time, or gained in time, it dropped back. If it was lost in time, it move up. It operated by electricity.
Why do you think they paid so much attention to that kind of thing?
Have any communication. Now you got communication. You can be in Greensboro and you can talk to a man on a train 100 miles away from Greensboro. Now you can talk to him like that. But, and they had to be there on the dock, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't make it there, I got to meet this train at a certain time. At a certain station, if you can't make it, you better go and sidetrack somewhere else. So that's, but now you can communicate with them. I know a man working on Charlotte region told me that he got in conversation with another fellow. They were on the same track. Now you get on this track. I'll get orders for it. But they caught it in time, so we went in the fast track, so it was the fast one. Dispatcher, he didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
They hadn't reported to him, you see. Consequently, they hadn't had that communication like they have now. Then you got on a 200-car train, engineer, you're 2 miles away from the engineer. On those long trains, I guess you notice those long trains they have. Some of them have 150, 200 cars.
I usually notice them when I'm in a car stopped at the intersection going by.
Yeah, up there at the Western Cross, you can see them. They mm-hmm. cross that pretty quick, you know.
But did
a man national, he can tell them that man leaving Spencer. He communicates with him. By wireless, you see.
Mm-hmm. Did people that worked for the railroad, were they pretty punctual outside of the railroad? You know, in their daily, in their leisure time, were they punctual or?
Oh yeah.
Carryover.
Yeah.
What did everybody get given a watch?
And everybody had to have a standard watch.
You all had to buy your own.
You had to buy your own watch, you know. Now they're wearing wristwatches.
Mm-hmm. Now it doesn't matter.
I guess a standard watch, you got to be 17 or 21 Jewel. You had B.W. Raymond Jewel, 21 Jewel. Well, what do you got? I got a B.W. Raymond, 21 Jewel, you know. Well, mine's 17 Jewel.
Mm-hmm.
I think 17 or 18 would pass, they'd rather have a 20 or 21 jewel. Some of them to go up high as 24 jewels. They were very expensive.
Which was the best watch?
I think, all of them are bound to be good. B.W. Raymond, and Elgin, and I think it's a watch made at Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And Waltham has a good watch. I still got my old Waltham watch. I had to have one in the call boy, see, my daddy bought it for me.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a 15 jewel. But still running though, last time I saw it. I don't know where it is now. But
were they gold watches and
yeah, gold. Most of them gold. Some gold filled watch cases. They were pretty, and they very $40 for watch was considered a pretty good price back in those days. Maybe you know, making $50 a month by a $40 watch. I think mine cost around $15. Mm-hmm. I was making $25 a month and still $15.
A lot of money for a watch.
Oh, yeah. More than half of my salary for a watch. But I had to have it because I picked up my watch and I had to call this fellow a certain time. And I looked at my watch and I put on a little more steam, you know, a little more speed to get there in time, call him on time so he wouldn't delay the train.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever mess up as a call boy and like oversleep yourself and not get to somebody?
Yeah, I went to sleep one night. Well, if I hadn't fired me though, I was supposed to call a man a certain time. I just dropped off sleep. Might have been day after payday, something like that.
After hitting all those bars.
Yeah. And I didn't wake up. Train was in the yard. Just a special.
Mm-hmm.
Train was in the yard. And I had to go all the way. I had an engine come around and call, "Where's the engine for this train? The train's in the yard." Well, I went and called him. I told him what it was up against. I went to sleep. The engineer and fireman both were sleeping in the room. They were Columbia Vision men, and the train went to Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
They got up and snatch on of Richard and then went running to get away. Didn't delay about 15 minutes.
That's good.
It was about 5 o'clock in the morning, didn't nobody find out about it, and found out about it. So President Roosevelt was on the rail of that train.
Really?
Yeah, Theodore Roosevelt.
What was he doing on the train?
He was going south somewhere, going to Florida, I think. Had the southern operating trains between New York and Florida. They came to Washington and come over. Over the southern, went to branch off at Charlotte and went to Columbia, and Columbia on into Jacksonville.
Remember any particularly fancy Pullman cars or like an engineer's cab that he's got all fixed up special for himself?
Yeah, we had an engineer. His name was Tom Leach. He used to have his, he and his fireman come over. He used to leave about 11 o'clock in the morning. They'd come over about 8 o'clock in the morning, go to work polishing the brass on it. He had all kind of brass on the front of the engine, on the sides, and on the inside of the cab. He even had a clock on the inside of the cab.
Was that pretty usual that people had all those things? Or?
Yeah, very unusual to see. Because most people give it to them. I know he had a clock on there. And
mm-hmm.
he kept those brass on the brass gauges shined up, you know. It was very pretty. And they had it decorated with brass flag holders. It kept his end pretty clean.
Was riding on the train back then a pretty fancy experience? Did people get all dressed up to go on a train trip?
Oh yeah, sure, everybody dressed up going on a train trip. Going off on a train. Yeah, they had some. Back there when they had those wooden sleeping cars, I was sleeping in those. Down in New Orleans one time, I was going to Jackson, Mississippi. And got on a train there. They had one of those old time wooden cars there. It was all walnut, all black walnut on the inside. Oh, that thing was pretty. All the brass was shined up, and all the lights, and they were shined up.
What kind of beds did they have in?
They were upper berth and lower berth. Both about the size of this bed, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a curtain, of course, there in the front of it. You go to bed and pull your curtains there. Maybe let somebody else on the aisle opposite you. They were very, very nice. And those days is, of course, different now. The old gentleman, you see him going in the Pullman car and wanting to wash up. And it was made of stainless. It wasn't stainless steel, it was nickel plate. Fixed his wash basin with nickel plated. And they'd finish shaving or washing the face, and they'd take the Pullman car and furnish some towels, and give you a towel. And they'd take that towel after they dried the face, and wash all the water away from them, just as dry as a chip bone. After they'd finish it and leave it there for the next man. Well, he left, the man before me left it good and clean for me. Well, I had an unwritten law, and they all of them did it. But now they go in there, some of them slob out and spill water on the floor. But you never saw any water spilled on the floor. What you might say, gentlemen.
So that would just be, that wouldn't be the porter that would come in and clean up. It would be each person cleaned up after
himself.
Yeah, well,
the porter, if he didn't take all his time just looking after the washroom, he had to get other people up, you see, and make up the bunks after the people got out.
Mm-hmm.
And he had much as you do that then. He would come and clean it up, but you'd have to call him. See, maybe making up some beds or something. It was, had 12 uppers and had 12 lowers, and they had a drawing room, one end of the car. It was close to motor ride in the drawing room. And they had a up and a lower and a couch to sleep on. Put three people in there. Well, you could put four of them in there. You give them a whole two-door berth. I slept in a two-door berth. I slept in a two-door berth and upper berth. It's very uncomfortable. It's not too comfortable sleeping two in the berth. We made the pass of Pullman cars down the shop, and we'd get a half-weight Pullman order, you know, say Pullman fare was $2 from Salisbury and Norfolk.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd get it for $1. Well, I'd take the upper and I'd sleep in the upper and I'd put my wife in the lower. I'd get a section, you see, for $2. And both of us would be comfortable. And I'd come home and have a hard week, you know, and be tired out. And let's go to Norfolk tonight. And, oh, I can get ready. So all I got to do is throw me an extra dress in the bag and said, I can go. And we'd catch a 9 o'clock train, had a Pullman car for Norfolk. Go to bed and leave him Salisbury. Wake up next morning in Norfolk.
Did you travel pretty much?
I did practically all my traveling by train. Even when I was in the 6th North Carolina Regiment, we did a lot of traveling by train. We rode the Louisville National Railroad, rode that fine train they have, they call it the Georgia, between Atlanta and Chicago. That was a nice train. It had roomette cars, and the old style upper and lower berth,
mm-hmm.
chair cars, and two dining cars. Well, one of them was a tavern car, and they had one dining car and one tavern car in there. You could go back in the tavern car and get any kind of drink you wanted, sandwich or something like that. But that's going to make it very inconvenient, you say. You heard that you're going to automatic on the trains.
Well,
of course, they have one attendant, one attendant, but pretty expensive that. You got to have first cook, second cook, and third cook.
Mm-hmm. What they're going to do is they're going to have microwave ovens and just, you know, have it all frozen in advance so they don't have to have any cooks.
Yeah. Well, they had that when they had 35 and 36 there. I went back and eat on that. Got a bowl of soup there. I think it was about 75 cents for about a 2 tablespoonful.
Okay, before this side of the tape runs out, I was wondering if you could go over how you first got interested in getting a job working for the railroad. What made you try to do that?
Well, like I say, the people working, they had money. The people wasn't working didn't have any money, and I didn't have any money. And father had a large family, and old time he fed that big family. You know, he didn't have any money to give us.
Mm-hmm.
I decided that job would come open that shop for a call boy. They wanted somebody to call crews. And I got the job. I was 15 then.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked on that about 2 years and got promoted. That paid $25 a month, 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. And night clerk, he died, and they promoted me from call boy to night clerk. That was $40 a month, 12 hours a night, 7 till 7, and 7 days a week, $40 a month.
You basically started to work for the railroad because the money was good?
Yeah, you had money, and the fellow wasn't working, he didn't have any money. It was the farm that didn't have any money, and working on the farm, he hadn't pay him off from sweet potatoes or a couple mm-hmm. of gallons, 5 gallons of molasses, something like that. I remember when the one little railroad down short line down close to Pinehurst, a man told me that he worked that railroad, just short line, run about 10 or 12 miles. They paid him off in molasses and flour and stuff like that. That's all they got. Didn't get any money. Give him a 5 gallon molasses and a sack of flour.
Mm-hmm.
A week's work for them, wasn't it?
You figured you wanted some money.
Yeah, I wanted some money. $25, a whole lot of money back in those days. Of course, I paid my mother and my board out of that. I helped my father feed the other children.
Mm-hmm. What was your father doing when you got your job at the railroad?
He was working in the shop. Car repair in the shop.
How long has he worked for the railroad?
Let's see, he went to work in 1880. And he died in 1926.